This is WCNO Palm City, the good news station.
That had a microphone on a stand. And that's where he went, and he got the microphone, and he welcomed everybody. And then he said, I've got this young guy that has an incredible message, and he's going to share it with you. You know, he started puffing me up a little bit, and he said that, George, come on down here. I want to introduce you to our audience. So I walked down, assuming that my speech would be up at the. And so I got down there, and he introduced me, and he put his arm around me and hugged me. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, go get him, big boy. And he introduced me and said, George is going to stand right here and give you an incredible message. And so my notes were up. Didn't have my notes. And he did that intentionally to teach me a lesson. And Rhett, I've never used a note since then. He gave me some pointers. He said, what you need to do is to decide the points you're trying to get across. And once you do it, you don't want 20 points. You don't have time to do that. But you need somewhere between 4 and 5 points. And then what you do is memorize those points, be it attitude, be it faith, be it problems, difficulties, goals, whatever. And then when you go through your points and you talk about attitude, all of a sudden attitude it'll come up and you'll remember everything that you need to say about attitude. And that's the way I did it. And have done it ever since then, and it works.
You know, it is fun. It is amazing. Having been on the doing interviews for 28 years, I've interviewed over 40,000 people, including yourself, Billy Graham, presidents of the United States, Secretary of State. It is amazing those that have longevity and have healthy minds. And definitely achieve their goals, whether they're monetary or there's something altruistic for fellow men. Generally, there is a thread of positiveness. I was a shy, reticent, painfully diffident young man, and I picked up that book at the age of 20, The Power of Positive Thinking, in a little drugstore. And I thought, what in the world is positive thinking? It sounded like it was a foreign language. For some reason, it said, read this book and change your life. Mm-hmm. And I started reading it and underlining and read it. And then I reread it. And then I got to meet Dr. Peel. And like you, he said, well, Rhett, he said, just go out and love the people. He said, get speaking engagements wherever you can. And he said, the people. Just go out and love the people.
And you sound like him. What a guy. That's great.
Just go out and love the people. He talked like that.
Yeah.
He was great, wasn't he?
Oh, incredible.
Incredible. Let me tell you briefly, for my 25th birthday, I decided to take myself to New York City. Well, anyway, I got up in the morning and I went down to Marble Collegiate Church, and he spoke about, he was a little man then. I thought, oh, I've come too late. He's old. Well, he stood up and he was so powerful, and
he
spoke about using music as a motivational tool. Well, I write songs that I used to sing at business conventions, positive thinking songs. So anyway, we get done with the service, and I said to the ladies there, "Oh, I'm here to see Dr. Peel." And they said, "Well, you can't do that." They said these people have been booked to see him for months in advance. And I said, "Oh, it's my birthday. I came all the way down here for my birthday." Oh, and they said, "Hold on a second." Well, the next thing I know is an arm's underneath my arm, and they whisk me into his office. And and I said, Dr. Peel, I've loved your book. It changed my life. And, you know, you were talking about music as a motivational tool. And I said, that's what I do. I sing, I write these positive thinking songs and I sing them. He said, well, surely the good Lord has had his hand in this day, because in 80 years or 84 years, I have never spoken about using music as a motivational tool ever before.
Oh, that's great. That is great. Incredible.
Now, I want people to know that they're out there right now. And, you know, I used to be, I lived in the ghetto for a while, and I was poor. And I remember I hitchhiked one time, I don't know, it was 15 or 16, and I got into it was snowy and rainy and sleety, and I got into this car. Well, I knew immediately I had entered wealth. It was I believe it was a Mercedes-Benz. Uh-huh. And this man was very nice, young man. And he was very nice to me and kindly spoke to me. And it was warmth. There was heat in the car. And it was cold outside. And I was thin and hungry. Well, anyway, the car stopped. And I said, I was over near Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York. I'd reached my destiny. My brother had a little apartment over there, a garret apartment. Anyway, so I left his world and he drove off. And I was back in my world, my empty world, my hungry world. And so now later in life, I just wish some man, you know, because my father was killed like yours when I was a boy in a car accident. He'd been an attorney at law, killed the day before my fifth birthday. But I just, for you and I want us to, there might be somebody listening right now. And I want to reach out to some gawky-looking, ear-sticking-out kid like I was, who's poor and doesn't think anything of himself, but doesn't realize that a guy named George, just like he and I and you, who was poor, ended up falling to his knees because his mother said, George, when the dark days come, maybe that'd be a good title for your book. Another one, maybe a booklet says, when the dark days come, pray.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. But
now, tell so for the people that didn't hear the other broadcast, you're so poor you couldn't even afford to go to business school. Tell them that story.
Well, you mean when the girls came? Or
yes,
you want me
yes.
To...
Yeah. Well, how you got there? You know that you became a janitor because you couldn't afford the books or the tuition.
Yeah. Well, what happened is that I was I went after high school, which I was the worst student in my class, and I had to struggle to get there. I want you to know that.
But, well, God says he's chosen the foolish things of the world to confound those that are wise in their own eyes. I got a friend up the street here. He's a billionaire. And, you know, he said he got an eighth grade education. He said, can you imagine what I could have done if I got in ninth grade?
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, it's a great point. It's absolutely a great point. But anyway, I went to work in a cotton mill. They made towels and sheets, and I was lifting big bolts of cloth, and hurt my back, and so as a result I knew I needed to get a job where I could, you know, not a common labor job, something I could push a pencil instead of heavy bolts of cloth. And so I couldn't get in a major college because of my horrible record at school.
Yeah.
And so I ended up enrolling in a small business school in North Carolina. And I ran out of money and couldn't pay my tuition. And the director of the school let me or helped me by coming on, that staying after school each day, emptying trash cans, sweeping, cleaning the chalkboards and that type thing, and putting drinks and crackers, et cetera, back in all the vending machines, and for my tuition. And then I got a bill for my books, and the books were almost as expensive as the tuition. And I said, good grief, I can't do it. So I went back to him, and he told me if I would come in on Saturdays, mop all the floors, clean all the toilets, then he would give me the books. And I said, yes, sir, I'll do that. So what happened is that the school was in Concord, which was about 30 miles away. I lived in Kannapolis, and I'd have to drive from Kannapolis to the school and then do the cleaning on Saturday. And I was dating a girl, which later became my first wife. She was she lived in Concord, and I couldn't go see her after cleaning all the toilets and mopping the floors and whatever. So I had to go home, drive back, and you know, shower, get cleaned up, and drive back to Concord, which was 60 miles round trip. And so I didn't take me long to figure out that what I need to do is to bring a change of clothes and just stay at the school, clean up there, and just go straight to pick her up for dinner and that type of thing. So one Saturday after I was cleaning, these two girls were knocking on the door. The door was locked because I was in there doing my janitorial work. But fortunately, I had finished, was dressed, ready to go pick up my girlfriend.
Ah, okay.
And so I looked pretty good, even smelled good. And so I went to the, I heard them knocking. I went to the front door and I put the key in, unlocked the door. I felt like a big shot when I had keys to the to the place. And as soon as I opened the door, I said, "Well, hello, young ladies. How are you? What can I do to help you?" And one of the girls looked at me and she said, "Do you work here?" And I said, "Yes, I do." I didn't tell her what I did, but they said they were interested in enrolling in school, and could I show them around? I said, absolutely. So I gave them a tour to school. I gave them some literature and gave them a little pitch. And so anyway, the weekend passed. I was in class that Monday morning, and these two girls came to the school.
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m. or 3 p.m. for the continuation of this interview. I'm your host, Rhett Palmer, and this is a new day.
Today's broadcast is supported by Plains Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie. Thanks to Dr. Alex Plain at Plains Dental Arts for keeping New Day with Rhett Palmer on the air daily at WCNO 89.9 FM.
Put your hands together as Bishop-elect Bruce B. Allen leads us in this praise chorus. Lord, you live in my praise. So my hands I will raise in the sanctuary. Lord, dwell in my praise.